What's up, everybody? It's your favorite podcast, back again with a new episode. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Back on Our Podcast. So Josh, how you doing? Hope you're enjoying the other days.
Man, did I really enjoy it? I was sick for about a week. That's why we didn't have two episodes, because of me. I was sick last week, but I'm better now. But I think I was better by Christmas. So yeah, I enjoyed the holidays, but just to be fair, I was not enjoying it at all. Yeah,
I was bored as hell, but thank God football is back, so at least I can cope with the hard times that I'm facing.
Hard times. Man, we're all going through some stuff, but we hope football can help us and God can help us deal with whatever it is. But, okay, so like I said, I was sick, so apologies for not being able to record. This is the first time that we've missed two episodes in the same week. So, like, it feels like we've been out for a month, really. speaking of being out, Ben Chilwell might be out for the rest of the season. Sad news for Chelsea fans. But maybe a blessing in disguise, because they can now go out and get a proper world-class left-back. Alonso is decent, but I'm talking about world-class left-back. So, I mean, so we'll see who they go for, if they actually go for anybody. Let's start with Barcelona. Barcelona have signed now, first of all, the January window, like I just called it, is meant to open in January, is it not? But Barcelona, yes, doing Barcelona things, have signed Ferran Torres on December 28th after we record this podcast. On a 5-year deal, Barcelona will pay for £6.7 million up front, with a further £8.5 million in add-ons. Obviously, City have cashed out now, because that's almost triple what they sold him, what they bought him for.
Yeah, that's the thing is, obviously City they are in need for business as well. So as much as they are losing a very good promising player, but they have to make sure that they make money out of it. And to me, I think it's a very favorable deal for all parties, for the player, for City, and for Barcelona as well. Because Barcelona, they need attacking players. As we've said throughout the season, they can't bury their chances. City as well. City, obviously, we know that they might not really necessarily need the money, but the other money now, we see them reinvest, and selling for Torres to help their FFP, if you like. And for Ferran Torres, so a player that has his entire family in Spain, and, you know, and wearing the Blaugrana shirt will give him more opportunities for the national team, and he might start to enjoy his football, because he will get more game time in this Barcelona team, because Barcelona are struggling to get quality players in the attack. So I think it's a good deal for all parties, yeah.
Okay, just on a side note, his release clause is set at 1 billion euros, of course, because why not? Everyone in Spain has... You know what I think about release clauses? I think that your release clause you should put on a player should be directly proportional to the wages he earns. So, for example, if you want to put someone on 1 billion euros release clause, then FIFA should make it mandatory to be getting £500,000 a week. So that way, you're feeling it. Not that the player will be on, because some players are on 90K a week, and yet their release clause is 750 million, 1 billion. It makes no freaking sense, but that's a conversation for another day. Barcelona, this guy has been injured since September or August. is it not a risk taking a player coming from a long-term injury? That's one. So, and secondly, if we're looking at it, Barcelona need, so two things, that's the first one. Secondly, Barcelona need a striker, someone that can put the ball in the back of the net. Ferran Torres at Valencia was a winger who stayed high and wide most of the time. Obviously, he could do other things. He could score goals, but basically, his job was to provide. It was Guardiola that was transforming him into a number nine, especially because of Aguero's injury problems last season at City. So now, without Guardiola, can the player develop like that? Because we know Guardiola's influence on him was already starting to show. So two things. The injury problems and the fact that he's really not a striker and it was Guardiola that was making him a striker.
I don't think the injury problem, there's any problem with the injuries, because so many times we've seen it with various clubs where you signed. I even remember Ekai Gundogan when he was signed. I remember watching this very well. He was on crutches in the plane. When he arrived to City, he was on crutches. He was on this very serious injury. I think he damaged his ACL, was his knee. So he was out for a long time, but City still got him because they knew the quality he has. So I don't think, and Ferran Torres is already recovering. Like even before when Barcelona signed Ferran Torres, I used to see on Twitter his recovery process, him training in the gym and all of that. So I think at the end of the day, if he recovers well, then he'll be a very, very huge uplift for Barcelona in this coming January. Then for what you said, like obviously Guardiola, there's no denying it. Guardiola is one of the best coaches in terms of bringing out the best in players and understanding where a player can thrive. We've seen it that Ferran Torres under Guardiola was turning into something else. And it was just a very, very sad thing that he got injured very, very early in the season. And I just think at the end of the day, Ferran Torres is a brilliant player that understands how football is. Because when he plays for Luis Enrique, he's also asked to do different things. Sometimes Luis Enrique plays him out wide. Sometimes Luis Enrique plays him as a number nine. So it just depends on how Xavi wants to deploy him. And I think under Xavi and with the way Xavi wants to play, I think he can thrive as well. It's just that we just have to wait and see. That's just the way I see it.
I hope it turns out well, because while I agree with you that the injury doesn't seem serious and everything, I'm still really concerned about the position he's going to play, because let's say Barcelona's hypothetically now Barcelona's strongest 11 front three. Fati must feature. I think we all agree on that. Fati left, Dembele right. The payoff of Ferran Torres down the center, it's still arguable. If you're putting Ferran Torres right, then you shouldn't be trying to give Dembele a new contract, which you are hearing they are close to agreeing. So, I don't know.
And Barcelona can do whatever they want with Dembele. Do you know why I see it? Like, for example, if we're talking about attacking positions, Fati will start definitely. But the second person on that team sheet is Ferran Torres. Depay, Dembele, Coutinho, Luke Dio,
are we forgetting how good Depay was at the beginning of the season?
Depay, good. Oh my God.
Beginning of the season.
Well, I can't remember. I don't think I can remember him being.
Of course. Very short term memory. That's good. You also cannot remember how good Messi was for the club, right?
Of course, I can remember that.
Messi last played for the club in May, but Depay was good in August, September, October. So how come you cannot remember that?
I can't remember. It's not my fault. I can't remember.
Of course. Fans like you are the reasons why they say fans are toxic. But we'll leave that. But now another angle to this is, how can they afford this guy? How can they afford him? Because Barcelona have taken a loan from an institution to fund the transfer fee, which obviously makes sense. But now, how can they get in line with the fair play rules? Because we know that Aguero's wages are off now, but then now they need to offload someone. So we're talking the likes of Coutinho, Umtiti, Luke De Jong, maybe Tammy Zone. But who want these players? I think the only sellable assets they have are maybe Serginho Dest, that's a big maybe, and Frankie De Jong. Can they get buyers for these guys?
If they can't get buyers for these guys, like, obviously, Barcelona, they're already planning for their summer transfer windows. They're already looking at targets. So they need to get rid of Coutinho and Umtiti, like you said. But a way that they can make sure that they register for Antares is through Dembele. That's why they need Dembele to sign a new contract. So if Dembele signs a new contract, he's going to take a very, very huge, significant
But you know the interesting thing about that?
What's interesting now?
The pay cut he would take will come into effect at the end of the season. So it still doesn't help in the Ferran Torres situation in the immediate term.
No. The way it works, is in the immediate term, you can say yes, but like the way everything works is as far as during the end of the season, the revenue and the La Liga salary cap are in line with what La Liga has set, then you're good to go. That's just the way it is.
Okay, we'll see. We'll be watching it closely, of course, because it's going to be interesting. I think there will still be drama in this situation, but we'll see.
Yeah, I see contract terminations. That's why I see it. If Barcelona gets desperate.
Yeah, possibly. So now let's go to the Premier League because there's no La Liga action, there's no Bundesliga action, Serie A. All of them are on break, but the Premier League, being the workaholics they are, I've been having two games in 48 hours, much to the ire of Jurgen Klopp, Thomas Tuchel, Ralf Hasenhüttl. Countless managers are complaining. Now, that's where I even want to start from. So me, I'm of the opinion that this doesn't make any sense. Why are you playing games on the 26th and the 28th? I can understand 26th and 30th or 26th and 31st. But why are you playing 26th, 28th, 31st or 1st? It doesn't make any sense. That's my own point of view. But then there's another school of thought that says that this has been going on for decades in the Premier League. It's a tradition in England. So it's more like, if you don't like it, then don't come to coach in the Premier League. So what side of defense are you on?
The truth is, I've said this so many times on the podcast, no one really cares about the players. The players are pawns in all these things. It's something that they need to correct. Now, FIFA are looking to bring biennial World Cup every 2 years. That's more games, more fixtures. Premier League, more games, more fixtures every year, every single time. And now with COVID trying to shape the fixture calendar, we'll have games where we'll be seeing teams play every 2 days, like you said, every 48 hours. So for me, it's something that they need to look out. I don't think it will kill anyone if there was no football in Boxing Day. I don't think it will kill anyone.
Okay, I have to interject there. That's a tradition. Because right from when I was a little kid, I've loved watching football on Boxing Day in the Premier League. I have no problem with Boxing Day fixtures. My problem is the one that comes after that on the 28th. For God's sake,
why? The one that comes after that, like, it won't kill anyone. Let's be real. It won't kill anyone. It's, at the end of the day, the way I see it is just money. Because
because now all attention is on the Premier League, like I said.
Exactly, all attention is on the Premier League. So it's just money. That's just the way it is. It's just money. It's hard to see, and managers, they need to find a way to navigate that, because we've seen it now with players getting injured. Yesterday's game, Alex Maximan and Wilson got injured in the same game. So we'll see more of this stuff.
So Newcastle are doomed. If those are long term injuries, they are finished.
Exactly. So it's just the way it is. Like, we need to consider the health of players, because when you look at it, players are humans as well. So that's just where I see it. I'm of the opinion that they really need to think more about players' health. But to me, it's not just the Premier League. It has to start from FIFA down to UEFA, then the FAs of the different leagues.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of players feeling the brunt of everything, N'Golo Kante picked up a knock and he might be out. We don't know how long again, but I don't know. Maybe Chelsea need to look at strengthening. I talked about Chilwell being out long term, so maybe Chelsea might be looking at left back and midfield positions, as if they actually want to be title contenders, which you are adamant that they are. I'm saying they are not. So now let's talk about title contenders. For sure, we know that the first two on the table are title contenders. City, Liverpool. Are we still adding Chelsea to that?
Of course, we're going to add Chelsea to that. And the reason for this, let me just highlight
something. Just a question. Without a replacement for Chilwell and with Conte's injury problems persisting.
Okay.
For me, there's a caveat. If they get a replacement for Chilwell and a midfielder, then yes. Now, it depends on the quality of the players they bring in. So if they fill those two holes, which for me are glaring and gaping, if they fill those two holes, then yes. If not, they're not at contenders.
Well, how will I say this? I think what changed my mind was the Chelsea game I watched during the Boxing Day. So the reason why I changed my mind was I felt like, since if Lukaku is fully fit, Chelsea will win majority of their games. If Lukaku is fully fit, like what I saw from Lukaku, if he's fully fit and ready to fire, that means Chelsea will win most of their games. It just depends on those big boys. That's when they meet Liverpool and Man City. But most of their games in the Premier League, if Lukaku is fully fit, they'll win. But like you said, if they are able to get replacement for those positions, especially the left-back position, because we all know how Tuchel likes to play. He wants his full-back up and high so that they can be able to finish off chances that falls to them. Because of the way their system is, the full-back will always get chances. So I think if they are able to get a full-back replacement, then Rudiger and Thiago Silva are still like the fulcrum of that defense. I think Chelsea will still be in the conversation. It just depends on how fit Lukaku will be, because they need Lukaku to fire and get those goals. Because when you look at Chelsea these days, they look vulnerable in defense and they don't score a lot. I've been saying this for a while. I don't really look at Mount as a player that can get you those numbers. Like people have been saying, is the next Lampard. So
in terms of goals.
Yeah, in terms of goals.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Is it good?
I know he gets some goals here and there, but just for me, I'll just end it with this. If Lukaku is fit, I think Chelsea will win most of their games.
Yeah, definitely. Chelsea will win most of their games. But the problem is, will they win enough? Will they win up to the amount that City and Liverpool win? That's where. So now for me, Chelsea are in limbo. Chelsea are not good enough currently with the injury problems. They are not good enough to win the league. But they are still better than the chasing pack, the likes of Arsenal, Spurs, United, West Ham. So Chelsea are on their own in thought. They are not fighting for anything. They are not fighting for top. They are not going to be dragged down to the top fours. And they are not going to be able to reach up to City and Liverpool. That's what I think. Right now, like I said, my opinion is flexible and can change if they are active in the general transfer window.
Okay, I just want to even say something. Let's just start talking about the title race before we move on. So, which Chelsea player will miss for the AFCON? I think it's just Mendy. Am I right?
Yeah, just Mendy. Just Mendy. And okay. The AFCON will probably... That means missing two Premier League games for sure. And maybe if Senegal go far, maybe missing a third game as well. Because...
Okay.
Yeah, okay. She wasn't...
The reason why I'm pointing out this thing, yeah? Is out of these three title contenders, the person that AFCON might really affect, if it does affect them, is Liverpool. Because Liverpool will be missing their best
games. That's the problem. If it was four games, five games, I would agree that Liverpool would probably not even win the league. If Salah and Mane were to miss five games, I'll tell you Liverpool cannot win the league. But just two games. And the games are against Brentford and I've forgotten who else. So you have Jota.
I think that one was Brentford and Crystal Palace for Liverpool.
Yeah, they are going to win without Salah, trust me.
Well, the reason why I was trying to point out that thing is the league table might change just before Salah comes back from AFCON. So that's just the reason why I was pointing it out.
And then Chelsea can prove me wrong to show that they're tied to contenders. Chelsea have Liverpool, I think, on the 2nd of January or New Year's Day. And they have Man City on the 15th. So those are back-to-back games. If Chelsea lose both games, then even you have to agree with me that they're not tied to contenders. But if they win both games, then yes, they're contenders.
But you know you don't have to beat your direct rivals to win the league.
You don't. Right? You see the point now. There's a statement that is true. But so people say that. You know how people make a fuss about being top of the league at Christmas? All this nonsense of, hey, we're topping the tree at Christmas. You don't win the league in December, but you can lose the league in December. Chelsea last season under Lampard, if you remember, Chelsea were topping the league in November. They had a terrible December, and after that, everybody with a brain in their head that watches football knew that Chelsea cannot win the league. It was in December they lost that league. So, Chelsea cannot win the league after winning. Let's say they win Liverpool and City. They cannot win the league after that. But if they lose to both of them, they can lose the league in January.
Yeah, fair enough. I have to agree with that.
Okay, so we've touched on Liverpool briefly. They are missing Salah and Mane for two games. I think they won't be affected badly. Are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think their firepower is too much. Diego Jota, Firmino, and the likes, they are still good enough to get them over the line.
Yeah, but interestingly, Andy Robertson will be missing for the Chelsea fixture because their game against Leeds was called off. So if the game against Leeds wasn't called off, Robertson would have missed Leeds and Leicester. But now, since it was called off, he's going to miss Leicester and Chelsea. So maybe that might be a potential weakness, but we'll see. Now, to the last and surely the biggest title contenders and the favorites, the reigning champions, Manchester City. That game against Leicester, that was a madness.
Hey, man, the way Man City play football, like, I'll tell you, as a Barcelona fan, it's heartbreaking to me, like, the way Manchester City replicated the Barcelona success. Like, I was just looking at them, I was like, this team. And you know what's funny? Do you know what's funny? City could have easily buried Leicester. But there's this thing, even I think Raheem Sterling said it when they interviewed him. The manager was warning us that these things could happen if we take our foot off the gas. And boom, they scored two. And we had to step up and we scored two. Like, you know, like,
I know, that guy scored three. It was 4-3 at the point.
Yeah. I just remember that. That's true. So, like, this is crazy, man. Manchester City. Well, I just think, you know, for a team that we've been crying out and saying they need a striker, the way they create chances, my God.
They don't need a striker. They do not need it. So, they beat Leeds 7-0. They scored four goals the game after that. And now they've scored six goals. So, 17 goals in three games, and they don't need a striker. For the game itself against Leicester, you know what? I was watching the game at home, and when it was 4-0, I had somewhere I needed to go to, and it was getting late. So I was like, it's 4-0, let me start going out. Then Leicester scored one. I was like, okay, I'm still going out. Leicester scored two. I sat down back. I was like, I'm not going anywhere. Leicester scored three. I was like, okay, game on. And to my utter amazement and disgust as a neutral, they could not defend another set piece correctly. And just 4 minutes after the third goal, they let City get the fifth goal. You know how good... Now, the irony is that City play great football, but if you check the goals they scored, terrible defending from Yuri Tillemans twice, giving away two penalties. Like I said, the Laporte goal, terrible defending. Even Sterling's second goal also came from a corner. So, City scored set pieces. With how good they played, Brendan Rodgers would actually be gutted that it was set pieces that was their doing.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, I just remember that even with the chances, like the chances you just scored that City scored from, like City created chances where Schmeichel had to make saves. There were Leicester defense were all over the place. They could have easily scored more. And for a team that, man, it's actually scary for everyone, because if Manchester City were to get a striker, this is why I see it. The only reason why Manchester City can't win the Champions League is, in a Champions League game, you need one chance and you need to bury the chance. For example, the reason why City scores goals for fun is City can create 20 chances in a match and score five, because they'll just overload the box and know that they are playing a game of gambling. They are trying to high risk, high reward, put more people in the box. It will fall to one of our midfielders. Boom, they bury the chances. But in a Champions League game, like, for example, where the games are tight and close, where you just create like five or four chances in the entire match, you need someone clinical to actually bury the chance. That would be a conversation for another day. But the truth is, at this moment in time, City are the team to fear. And I can't wait for the return leg for Leicester, for Liverpool City and Chelsea City. I can't wait for those matches.
Chelsea City, without Chilwell and without Conte, probably a City win, but who knows? We'll see. With everything we've said, yeah, so City favorites still.
Yeah, they're obviously favorites. Like, if Guardiola
again, narrow favorites or clear favorites?
let's just put it their favorites. You can say clear if you want to, but to me, they're just favorites. I don't think they are clear or they are narrow.
I think it's narrow. I think Liverpool will run them close, if not surpass them. So, yeah, I think it's very, very tight between those two. I think, like I said, I think Chelsea are just a bit behind them. But now let's go to the ones that Chelsea are above. Those are the ones fighting for the top four: Manchester United, Arsenal, Tottenham Hotspurs. I think West Ham cannot make top four, but let's just humor West Ham fans and add them into the mix. West Ham. So out of these teams I mentioned, who is looking like the strongest to make the top four, the fourth spot?
It might shock everyone to admit this, but for being 100%, we all know that it's a team from North London, Arsenal.
Yeah, finally, some respect for the Gunners from Leonard. Arsenal fans, just take that soundbite and listen to it again. Leonard finally showing some respect to Arsenal Football Club. Now, I know you like saying this. In a class of Olodos, somebody must carry first. So now, is it that you're saying Arsenal are the least terrible team, or are you actually giving them credit as a good side? Which one is it?
No. This is not a class of Olodos. Like, Arsenal, they are very, very good these days. Like, the way they score, the way they attack, the tactics, like, everything is spot on. Spot on. Even the way they keep clean sheets, the way they defend. The only weakness Arsenal has, in my eyes, is their midfield. Like, their midfield is not good enough. But other than that, their attack, the way they attack and the way they defend is very, very good.
No, let's not put Thomas Partey into that and let it sound like, no, Xhaka is not good enough. Let's not burden it and say the midfield.
But Partey is among it. Partey has not been that good this season. Like,
Partey has not been that good, but Xhaka is another low entirely.
Okay, do you know what's funny? I can twist it and tell you that since Xhaka came back to the midfield, they look better.
Since Xhaka came back to the midfield, he has committed countless stupid look.
Why was he look at that aspect? But since Xhaka came to the midfield, they look better than Partey and Lokonga.
Has that coincided with Martinelli's picking form, or are you giving Xhaka all the credit?
I'm just saying two things can be actually right in this case.
Well, fair enough. Speaking of Martinelli, I mean, very impressive in the last few weeks. Arteta has a mini headache on his hands in the sense that you have Bukayo Saka. I think Saka is nailed on to that because he's a left-footed player on the right wing to cut in. I think Saka is nailed on to start. I think the way Odegaard is playing, he's nailed on to start. Assisting, like he has just turned to an assist machine. Two assists against Norwich in the 5-0 drubbing, which came as no surprise to anybody on earth. Then, now for me, he now leaves three spaces. Do you persist with Lacazette, or do you put Martinelli up front and Smith-Rowe on the left wing? Or do you put Lacazette up front and now have a toss-up between Martinelli and Smith-Rowe for the left wing?
Do I see it? I think this is the correct squad for them, because Lacazette, Lacazette has been good for them. His link-up.
Oh, you know why I said Lacazette for me is not even a nailed-on starter. Lacazette is wasteful. I remember I watched the game against Leeds and Arsenal scored a ton of goals. I think 4 goals in the end. But Lacazette missed 2 one-on-ones. Obviously, nobody will say anything because Arsenal won 4-1. But at the end of the day, imagine if those 2 chances Lacazette had were the only 2 chances Arsenal had in the game. They are wasted and Arsenal are going to draw or lose that game. So for me, you need someone that is going to be clinical up front. Even the goal he scored this last game was a penalty. It's not like he did something from open play. So why is he a guaranteed starter if he's actually not scoring goals?
Well, that's the thing I want to highlight. You know, some strikers, like obviously you need your striker to bang in goals. But the way Lacazette plays, his all-round game, his passing, his runs, his positioning, everything, especially in the phase of build-up, is actually crucial for the way Arsenal plays. So I think
it's more of his leadership, though, because they are all young players. I think he offers more leadership. I agree with you that he offers all-round play, but I think the leadership is even more important, if I can put it that way, than the all-round play.
That's true. Because when you look at the attack, it's full of young heads. So that's the only out
I'm giving him. So now, Martinelli or Smith-Rowe? Smith-Rowe has come off the bench 3 games in a row and scored. For people that have Smith-Rowe in FPA, as we giving them heart attacks, mini heart attacks, because you see him on the bench, you're angry, he comes on, his scores. Second week, fourth game week.
Yeah,
I don't know how long he can continue that for, but is it now time that he starts for Arsenal?
The truth is, remember when we talk about Barcelona, when I make the point and say all these young players, they need to be rotated. So I think the way Arteta is using these guys is actually good for the team in the long run. So, for example,
okay, what of FA Cup final, strongest possible lineup, who misses out?
Hey, you put me in the spot like that, okay? God, this is hard. Right now, we'll go with Martinelli. But
out.
Yes, Smith-Rowe will be on the bench.
Oh, Martinelli to start. Oh, I thought you meant Martinelli to miss out.
Yes, Smith-Rowe will be on the bench, yeah.
Okay. But good thing I don't have to answer my own question because it's too tough. But I think I have to agree with you. Arsenal are looking like favorites for the top 4 race for now. Spurs are also looking good. Spurs 3-0 win against Crystal Palace, very comfortable. Wilfred Zaha, I've seen a lot of stupid red cards, but that has to be top 3 I've ever seen in my life, because for that to be a second yellow offense, for you to do that, you know you're on a yellow card, is ridiculous.
Zaha is a clown. That's why he's still at Crystal Palace.
I saw a tweet that the person said, this is why Zaha is 29 years old and is still at Palace. Because there's no doubt there's a quality player in there, but his temperament and his attitude is just terrible.
And you know what's pissing me off? When they gave him the red card, he was acting surprised. Like, don't you know what you do? Like,
that was the one that even off me. Like, I don't get it. How are you claiming innocence in that?
I don't understand. Like, I hate when players do nonsense like that. You know what you just did, and you're still acting like, oh, the referee was harsh. Oh, the referee is trying to get one over you. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, obviously, what is it called? Tottenham, they played their part. They did well. They had a very brilliant game. And credit to Antonio Conte. He's getting the best out of some bombs, Harry Kane and some other bombs. So he's trying, he's doing the work of Jesus Christ now, turning water into wine. So at the end of the day,
Lucas Moura flying to put in headers. Miracles are actually happening.
I'm telling you, very soon, Dele Alli might become world class again. We don't know, but
I don't know. No. Let's not turn this to a pipe dream, please.
I just think at the end of the day, looking, we just touched on another London club. So those two London clubs are looking good as it is. And the club that I'm even fearful of, we'll actually get to them. But we all know they have so many world-class players. They try to tell us Bruno is better than De Bruyne. So those are the clubs.
They have hyped players. Do they have world-class players or do they have hyped players? Let's be honest now.
Manchester United will tell you Harry Maguire is world-class. Luke Shaw is world-class.
Hell no.
Bruno Fernandes is world-class. Bruno Fernandes is not world-class in my eyes. What is his name? Rashford is world-class.
Who is not world-class?
Bruno Fernandes.
Who do you say is not world-class?
Bruno Fernandes is not world-class.
He's not the best midfielder in the world, but he's one of the best, so he's world-class.
No. Do you know what's funny? I've been saying this thing for a while. The reason why people look at Bruno Fernandes and think he's a good player is because the things that people care about more in football, when they look at it on paper, goals and assists, he gets it. But these days, he doesn't even get it. Goals and assists has been maxing his bad performances. It has been maxing his bad... Like, it's a max that everyone is saying.
I agree to a certain extent, but I think you're now being too harsh about it.
Okay. Yeah, I might be too harsh about it, but the truth is, I think he can be better, but he still has a long way to go.
He can be better. I think he has lost his way this season. I think last season he was exceptional, even without the penalties. But though the penalties, like you said, it makes him sound like a better player because I think he had 28 goals, 14 of them penalties. So to say someone scored 28, say he scored 14 goals, removing the penalties. So that alone makes him sound like a better player to the average football fan. But then at the same time, you could see his creativity. Now, I can't even see it.
Okay. So now we've touched on Arsenal, we've touched on Tottenham. So based on what we have seen so far, in between these three teams, United as well, who do you think will miss out? Like, we don't know. We are not magicians. We cannot even tell you what's going to happen in the future. But, like, if you had to just make a wild guess and say, who do you think will miss out? Like,
okay, so if that question is actually hard because two will even miss out. Only one can make it. So, let me tell you one that will surely miss out.
Okay.
Man United will surely miss out at this rate. Because Vanik, now see the interesting thing. Vanik came with this big reputation and a bunch of us were excited, including myself, to see what he can do in the Premier League. But then, you know, there's one thing where, let's say, you sack, for example, you sacked a Frank Lampard, you bought a Thomas Tuchel. Frank Lampard's preferred formation was four at the back, but in his first season, he used three at the back quite a bit. So he was bringing in a somewhat... So Tuchel came and brought in a somewhat familiar formation because a bunch of these players played three at the back, even under Antonio Conte. And then they played it for a bit under Lampard. So what Tuchel did was not foreign to them. They had played it before. So it was easier, not easy, but it was easier to adapt because they were used to it under different managers. Rafinha brings this strange and foreign 4-2-2-2 that I don't think any other top club in Europe plays. Now, you're not just changing a manager from like Ole to Rangnick. If Rangnick was using 4-3-3, you say maybe there'll be a few tweaks in his own 4-3-3. But this is an entirely new system. So, now we saw how terrible United were. I mean, United were awful against Newcastle. Newcastle should actually have won that game. So now, it's already showing that the players are not adapting. Like, they are finding it difficult to learn because it's entirely new to them. It's not just a new manager is in. So because of that reason, I struggle to see United making the top four.
Okay, fair enough. But okay, just this one assessment of this thing. So I'm of the opinion that why you might have so many good players, most of them, they don't work well together. So, for example, Maguire, Varane, you can see defensively, both of them, like, it's not a match of that.
Varane was shocked yesterday.
Exactly. Who is the sweeper? Who is the leader? Who is telling this one what to do? Who is telling this one when to push up? Like, in the midfield area, you have...
Okay, Bruno. But for you, who should be there? Because Maguire is captain, but Varane is the more experienced centre-back, shall we say. So for you, who should be the leader in that situation? The captain of the defense, let's say.
I think it should be Maguire. But the thing is, like I've kept saying, Maguire is not really good enough. Ever since he came to Manchester United, he has had just a good 6 months, and that was the Euro.
Just contradict yourself. You said not good enough, but he should be the leader.
Yes, because the reason why I'm saying Varane. I've watched Varane for a long time in his career. Varane has not led a defense before. He's always following what Ramos tells him to do. So Varane works where he has, for example, a type of Van Dijk that tells him, okay, this is when we're going to push.
That's well, then, to be fair on Varane, a bit fair, I think he actually does a bigger leadership role for the France national team than he did at Madrid.
Yes, but you know, like when he plays for France, how long does he play for? Let's say 4 games, 5 games, he goes back. But you know, when you're playing for your club, you play for like 40, 60 matches every season. So
yeah, week in, week out.
Week in, week out. So like Varane has not really led the defense like for a longer period. For he has not had that longevity to lead the defense. But when you see him, he works where he has someone that can actually guide and tell him what to do. So now, in the attack for Manchester United, I keep saying this thing. Manchester United have overhyped players. Look at Rashford yesterday. Look at Rashford. They tried to tell us Rashford was at the level of Kylian Mbappe. Look at Rashford yesterday. Like, you see all these
things. That was just a joke. Okay. Before, see... I actually want to slaughter Rashford. I want to slaughter him because he was awful yesterday. But every player that put on a United jersey, apart from Edison Cavani and De Gea, was awful yesterday, including Cristiano Ronaldo. Yesterday night was not his night at all. So now that brings me to the point of, is it not a shame? For me, it's a crying shame that Van de Beek is on the bench and Fred and starting together. You need someone to actually give the passes. And we saw that Fred could not even, like, the way he looked, the way he played yesterday, I'm not sure he can tie his shoelace. Like, that's how strong he was. So, are we going to just put blame on the likes of Rashford when the ball isn't getting to them as I trained you?
honestly, Manchester United's problem is just too much. That's the reason why, if you remember, I told you that if Manchester United were to get this Ajax manager, Erik ten Hag, like, he will fail. Because why these players might look good on paper, actually on the field, they don't know what to do. It's just the same thing when I look at Chelsea's entire squad. When you look at Chelsea's entire squad, you think Chelsea have one kind of super team, but most of them, they're not really good enough. It's just the same thing when I look at Manchester United. Most of them, they're not really good enough. So, and they can't work well together. They don't have that synergy, okay, that chemistry, that connection. So
let me just interject there. I just remembered something. You know, I mentioned Fred was clumsy and I'm not sure he could tie his shoelace. You know, there's a player in Barcelona that actually does not tie his shoelace when he plays.
Yeah, Gavi. He doesn't tie his shoelace. Yeah.
I don't know if he does not tie it or what, but we'll talk about that another day. Barcelona players and their strange ways in a strange club. So
No. There's actually a story. The commentator said it in a game. He said, the commentator said when he was still at the youth level. So his shoelace came off, and I think there's someone that always helps him to tie his shoelace because he doesn't seem to get it right after running for a bit to loosen back. So he was like, "Man, there's no need."
So
he has not learned how to tie his shoelace properly. So he keeps playing like that. It's not like he's a swagger thing.
Okay, now imagine this. A player steps on his shoelace and he falls down. Is he a foul?
That would be a question for the referee. I've actually thought of it in the penalty box. What would they do?
That's not a foul because you're meant to tie your laces. Come on.
Okay, but still, like, it's still part of the boot. You know, if they step on you and they clip your boot and you remove the person's boot, like, it's a foul. You know that?
That's his problem, really. Nobody cares. But more on that another day. So, we've already said United have problems. Arsenal look good. West Ham, for me, are totally out of it. I don't know if you're in agreement.
And to me, yes, because they have so many commitments and they don't have that strength in depth like the bigger team. So
key defenders.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just the way I see it. West Ham, I think they'll get to Europe, but it just depends on the European competition they end up going to.
Let's just do some quick predictions for the midweek games. Leicester, Liverpool, who do you see winning the game?
Of course, Liverpool is winning. Brendan Rodgers is a butler.
Comfortable or hard?
I think comfortably. Something like a 3-4-1.
Wow, 4-1. I won't be surprised, actually. So, Chelsea, Brighton, surely back-to-back wins for the West Londoners?
I think Brighton will be a headache for Chelsea, but I think Chelsea will win.
So, like, something like 2-1-ish?
Yeah, something like that. So I think 2-0. It's about time Chelsea keeps a clean sheet.
Okay. If only it were that easy, because I have his James on my FPL. City away at Brentford. I mean, there's not much to say here. Just how many will they win by?
No, I think this might be a fixture where City will just be like, let's take it down a notch. Let's just score 2 goals and that will be okay.
United to get back to winning ways against Burnley. Old Trafford.
That is a very, very difficult one because Burnley needs points. You see, it just depends on the United that turns up. If it's the United I watched against Newcastle, I'm telling you, Burnley will win that game. Or Burnley will get the point out of that game.
I'll even go one better than that. If it's the United that played against Newcastle, Burnley will win that game. That's how bad against Newcastle. But then, on the flip side, I don't see them being that bad. It's impossible. It's humanly impossible, even if they try to be that bad 2 games in a row. So, for that reason, I see United getting the win.
You're right.
So, that, That brings us to the end of this episode. This was fun.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was.
Good to be back.
Yeah, you said?
I said good to be back.
Yeah, well, good. It's good to be back. Well, for myself, Josh, and Yenta, Far Corner Podcast team, happy holidays and goodbye for now. Thank you.